I think I'm a little better.
I wanted to call you. I waited until he got through this press conference. He played about the same old broken record in private that he did in public. We tried to get agreement on 4 or 5 points. We may have made a little progress on non-proliferation. We're going to have Rusk and Gromyko work on it some more tomorrow. We may be able to table an agreement, but we're not positive. It looked like there was some movement on arms limitation and on arms shipment and on disclosure and on reducing military expenditures, cutting their budget down for nuclear weapons or for offensive or defensive missile systems, etc. We both agreed in general principle, but he never would set a time and never would set a place and never would get down to really executing it. It's just largely conversation, pleasant, no vitriolic stuff, no antagonistic stuff, no bitter stuff, two or three little low blows below the belt every now and then. When you'd meet him the same way, why, he would get back to the normal level. He's made clear they didn't want any confrontation in the United States, didn't want to fight us, didn't want to go to war, but on the Middle East, just one simple instruction, looked like he couldn't move one inch away from it on anything. It must be complete, absolute, immediate withdrawal of troops, period, nothing else with it. That was going to be the resolution. They could pass that in the General Assembly. They wanted us to support it there and in the Security Council and nothing else. And that unless and until that would be done, there's going to be a big, great war, and those people will be fighting for 10 years, and that they would have to support the Arab nations, and that he couldn't understand why we'd want to support the Jews, 3 million people, and 100 million Arabs. And I told him that numbers did not determine what was right. We tried to do what was right, regardless of the numbers, and we felt like that we'd have to take in maritime passage, and we'd have to consider where they were before they closed the Gulf, and if they were going to go back to where the armistice line, were they going to have to go back to the Gulf of Aqaba as it was. He said, well, that have to be done later and take 2 or 3 years to work out all these other things. Wouldn't give an inch on that. On Vietnam, he said, we've got to stop our bombing. We've got to pull out. That's what he said on television, and just got to get all of our troops out, that we're aggressor there, we're an invader there, we're a perpetrator of aggression, and not anything else will do, no substitute. We exchanged some views, and I asked some questions of him in that connection, and asked him what would happen if we stopped our bombing. Would they talk, and if so, how long? And would it just be another Korea talk to delay it, or would it be serious? Or would what would come from it, and what could he guarantee, or underwrite, or assure, or what did he think? And the net of it was just another line of stop your bombing, send your troops home, then things will work out.
And after that, we'll start talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, but I submitted him some questions, things to think about, and his folks. I asked him to let McNamara sit down and talk to him about disarmament and give me the name and the date and time and place. He would always dodge it. He claimed to be for it in principle, but specifically he wouldn't. He claimed that there would be should be other elements taken in the Middle East settlement, but he wouldn't do any of them until a withdrawal was effected. The Latin America thing, I gave him, told him his 6-7 hot spots that they're using Soviet material, Cuba was, that we caught a bunch of them the other day in Venezuela, that they were giving us hell in Dominican Republic and Haiti and Bolivia and half a dozen places, that this is a very serious matter, and Soviet equipment and Castro-trained people, and so
Give me one of those, will you?
He ought to realize that we thought this was very serious and we're going to have to take action. The OAS was going to take action. Would he give me his judgment, his comments, and what he could do about it? Said he couldn't comment now, but he was leaving for Cuba tomorrow, and he would bear these things in mind in talking to them. Acted like he's a little upset with Castro. Didn't say so. I guess that's about all. He has an obsession on China, and just said we better understand that they're very dangerous people, and we better start talking about their exploding these nuclear weapons. They are trying to promote this. We're just their stooges. He kind of makes the same speech about us as China makes about him. He said they all charged me with selling out to you. Said, you know what the Chinese are saying? You know what the Arabs are saying? Said, I want to ask you if you think I've sold anyone out. I said, yes, you sold me out. But you haven't sold them out. So you're staying awful close to them. He laughed. I'd think that was about it. I thought he was less vituperative and antagonistic and vicious and cutting and debating and argumentative than I have expected him to be. Gromyko has been, or Mikoyan, or any of the rest of them. He's pretty stolid, pretty stubborn. I felt like one time we got into Cuba somewhere, and I said, well, you talk about you don't believe in us. You think that we let Israel have some arms, troop carriers, or whatever it was. Tanks, as planes, I think he said. I said, we have tried, we've given very little arms. Most of our aid's been economic aid, and that's not true with all the countries. Your aid there's been mostly military and much more sizable than ours. Then you've helped others. I remember you've had pretty many missiles in Cuba. He just flared up big, waved his finger at me, and said, I want you to know that I opposed that, I fought that, I tried to keep Khrushchev from doing it, and when he did it, I made him back up and get out. And,
funny thing, I heard Khrushchev blame his predecessors and so on.
And then another thing, he said, I want you to know we're grateful to the American people, we fought by your side. I was in Leningrad. Stalin's dead at 12 years. We remember your great war against fascism, and you were with us, and you were patriots, and we're awful grateful, and we'll never forget it. But he didn't show a damn bit of evidence of it in anything he said on any of these things.
Yeah.
And I held back about the meeting, because I know these meetings, you just stir up a lot of hopes, and you don't get anything till the night he was due to go home, and he put off a day, and I finally made Russ go over it carefully, debriefing with Thompson, and then I got Russ to go over it with Gromyko, and then I got Russ to go over it with him himself, and he assured us it'd be substantive talks, and we could take up any of these things and get his opinion. And I would say that in fairness, as a teacher, I would grade him about a B+ on discussions on arms, that is, offensive, defensive missiles, the ABM. And I think that when he gets back, he'll probably set a date. But he didn't assure me of that. He did assure me that they would talk before he came here. But I just kept trying to get the time and place. I'd send McNamara, whoever he wanted, any place. We'd talk in Geneva, we'd talk in Moscow, we'd talk here, we'd talk the ambassadorial level. The main thing that I told Congress, I said, I've had him waiting 3 months. I don't think I ought to go on this with a big appropriation here if there's any chance of our reasoning this thing out. But he never did say what he'd do. But I believe we made a little progress there. I believe we made a little step closer in non-proliferation. I think that he thinks that we're not wild men. I believe I made a good impression on him from the standpoint of being prudent and being firm and being determined and not being a fraid cat or a bully either. And he made one or two passes that I don't want to discuss with anyone but you, but he said that I want you to know that if you do not deliver Israel here and on this resolution, withdrawal, and you cannot pull these fighters back like you do two boxing men in the ranch and separate the combatants. You pull them back to where they were before this war started, then I want you to know there's going to be a big war and there's going to be a great war, and it's coming soon. And I said, well, now, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, I hope that there's not going to be. And he said, if they, they'll fight with their fists and they'll fight with arms. And I said, now, if you're saying that the Israelis and the Arabs are going to have some further difficulties, I hope they don't. I'm going to do everything I can to keep them from fighting. I hope you do everything you can to keep them from fighting. But if you're saying that it goes beyond that area and others will be fighting, then you're speaking very serious business. It's something that concerns me greatly, and I think it should concern you. And he backed away from it and said, well, I said that they would be fighting out there. And I said, well, I'll do all I can to keep them from fighting. Hope you do, too. He made another pass this afternoon along the same line, and I met him the same way, and he backed off from it again.
That's
right,
he did.
Said, I was talking about they would be fighting, he said.
When this about this thing about China, our concern and his concern about, did he make any specific suggestion or express any specific thought?
No. He said we ought to have another conference on that. And you better be real concerned about these explosions. I said, we are. He said, that's a matter that we ought to talk about at another conference. I said, we're ready anytime. I'd be glad to have one every year and set time for it. We sack up every problem we got, every bilateral situation, and we could come, and you could come here, or we'd come there.
When you sent Ambassador Thompson down here the other evening, he gave me a good briefing. Then I suggested to him the thought that I've been talking with some people, and I told him if he had a chance to convey it to you. And I said, as I study this problem, there's two in the Mideast, two problems that have got to be settled before there's ever going to be any, even a modus operandi there in the Mideast. And one of them is these water, and the other one is these refugees. Now, they can be tied up, it seems to me, if we could set up a scheme of a corporation, world corporation, something like they started out with the Suez Canal or this atomic thing in Vienna. And suppose we, our government, bought 51% of the stock, and then we built in succession three great big salt purification plants on the there in the Levant, the Eastern Mediterranean. And we have to sell the stock to bankers all around the world and so on, and make the water problem there, a water solution, make it so attractive that both sides would almost be compelled by their people to take it. For example, I've been talking to some of these AEC people, or old scientific people. They say that without too expensive a thing, that you could put 500 million up to a billion gallons a day. And water much of Israel, Jordan, east, Egypt, east of the Suez, and some of Syria probably. So now, if we could get up a thing like that, we not only would employ thousands and thousands of people, and bring lots of land into cultivation. You see, we had that old Jordan River thing that Mary Johnson had developed, and the Arabs turned that down because they said they didn't want the Israeli to get any benefit out of that. But here, this would be 20 times the benefit of that dams on the Jordan, and it would be so attractive, seemingly, to both sides that we might we might create an atmosphere where they themselves could do something.
I broached that to him this afternoon. I didn't get any comment. I told him that our people had talked to me about it just before the meeting.
Yep.
He said, well, I just want to say this. I don't think we can talk about anything else to get the troops withdrawn. He said, we're referees in a fight, and you got to get your man with a nap in the neck, and I got to get our man with a nap in the neck. You got to separate them and put them back in their corner. So then we can talk about other things.
Well, what they have to be about their man, though, they have to pick him up and revive him.